Gildan Media, a division of Recorded Books, presents Your Resonant Self, guided meditations and exercises to engage your brain's capacity for healing. By Sarah Payton. Foreword by Bonnie Badenoch. Narrated by Laurel Merlington. Foreword. Bonnie Badenoch. People who write from a combination of passion, wisdom, and personal experience have something unique to offer their readers. Their words have a whole-mindedness and wholeheartedness that can reach into our minds and hearts in a way that changes something. Sarah is such a person. When I first met her 8 years ago, I noticed that she was curious about everything and immediately dug into the research to answer her questions. She delighted in the nuances of brain science and many other things, and had a particular knack for synthesizing the pieces she was accumulating. Then she began to diligently practice what she was uncovering about how brains work independently and in relationship. With humility and humor, she shared her obstacles as much as her successes, her ongoing wounds as much as her healing. This made her an extraordinary friend and teacher, whose own vulnerability made it safe for others to open as well. When I heard she was thinking of writing, I was so glad to be able to connect her with Norton so her voice could be more widely known. Now, with this book, we have the fruit of these years of study and practice, offered to help each of us develop a more compassionate and gentle relationship with our inner voices as an entryway to the path of healing. Developing this capacity inevitably leads to greater understanding and care for others as well. It couldn't come at a better time. Our world is facing severe challenges to our inborn potential for connection, empathy, and appreciation of differences. I believe we all feel it, no matter what our views on how our society's struggles can be ameliorated. The practices of self-warmth that Sarah offers can be a foundation on which we can rest to access our inherent surge toward healing, perhaps an essential ingredient in long-lasting cultural change. Because of the challenges we are experiencing, it is indeed a rare and most helpful resource. Each chapter couples clearly stated core concepts with guided meditations, along with introductions to relevant parts of the brain. This lovely design will first engage our understanding and then offer the opportunity to deepen into experience as we visit and revisit the meditations. It is an invitation to move slowly and with kindness into the territory of our inner world. The neuroscience that is offered, sometimes with beautiful illustrations, can help us picture what is unfolding within our embodied and relational brains when we have these experiences. It turns out that our brains are so supportive of our well-being and so available for healing that we might find these sections fostering even more hope and gratitude than science knowledge. I can imagine listening to, practicing, and absorbing each chapter more than once before moving on. In fact, it would likely be helpful to check in to see when our inner world is ready for the next chapter. While this isn't our usual way of reading, it would certainly be respectful practice for the very skill Sarah is offering. Deep listening. Deep inside. Several beautiful overarching ideas are explored in this book. We are built for connection at every stage of life, and if we don't have others who can provide that, it is possible to become our own compassionate self-witness. Our minds hold the capacity both to be engaged in an experience and to be held with kindness when we are in that state. This is an ability that can be cultivated so no one is barred from healing for lack of companions. Although I will say that Sarah is a most wonderful and resonant fellow traveler on this journey through her compassion-infused words. The second principle that has potential to ease our way is that every voice, no matter how distressing, has the intention to help. That single realization begins to calm the war that often wages inside between the parts of us we love, or at least tolerate, and the parts we hate and want to get rid of. When we open to the possibility that every part has value, something enormous starts to shift. Sarah's fierce and compassionate dedication to these often unwanted parts is a valuable encouragement for us to soften and open to them as well. The third message is that healing is a gradual and doable process, with its own logic and timing. Sarah moves from what are likely more accessible and tolerable inner journeys to those that may be more challenging for many of us. Her kind understanding, born of her personal experience and so many years of working with wounded others, makes room for each of us to find our pace, to be with our difficulties with compassion rather than judgment, and to even be with our inevitable judgments more gently. Such a broad space of acceptance sets a beautiful milieu for our gradual unfolding. I trust this book will hold each of us well on our journey toward greater resonance and compassion. Whether we are healers of various stripes, teachers, parents, clients of IPNB-informed therapists, or simply people who want to find more inner harmony, Sarah's offering will be a cherished resource for growth and healing. Bonnie Badenoch, Vancouver, Washington, December 2016. And the day came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom. Anais Nin. Introduction. What does your inner voice sound like? The one that's inside your head, that only you can hear? If you stop for a moment to notice what it feels like to be you, you will find that you have a particular attitude about yourself. You might be delighted in who you are and happy to be engaged in your passions and the contributions you are making. If this is so, you are probably listening to this book so that you can make your contributions to others even more meaningful. People can also feel disappointed in themselves. They can ache for success or competence or grace. They can long to know and express their gifts more fully. They can feel angry at themselves, or they can feel depressed, or they can feel more grief than they can bear. For these people, the emotional tone of stopping for a moment might be so overwhelming and painful that they avoid being alone with their thoughts at all costs, even to the point of hurting themselves with an electrical shock that they previously said they would pay to avoid, rather than just sitting and thinking. When people struggle with depression and shame, or with the threat of rage overtaking them, they learn sidestepping techniques that stop them from being alone with their brains. Always staying busy, endless games of solitaire, staying plugged into social media on their phones, being a workaholic, or addictions to change what it feels like to be themselves. A good working definition of depression is a persistent feeling or state of sadness, loss of a sense of pleasure, and loss of interest in life, can be accompanied by fatigue and constant overwhelm. Every person has an inner voice. In some people, it is expressed in words. In others, it is more of a tone. The inner voice can be a constant flow of emotional warmth. It can be expressed as a river of difficult emotions. For still others, it might seem emotionless, consisting of reviewing the layers of conceptual planning of our social lives and relationships, and checking to see if our lives are on track and if all the moving pieces are running in the right direction. Emotional warmth. Emotional warmth is the experience of being met or meeting others with affection and welcome. On the body level, when we are close enough to feel one another's body heat, there is warmth. So this concept also encompasses closeness and the possibility of comfort with physical contact. What does it feel like? Like gentle heat in our heart, spreading inside our chest and abdomen. It comes with relaxation and comfort. It brings us a sense of belonging. Where does it come from? From a feeling of being cared for, nourished, and nurtured. We experience warmth when we know we matter. What forces, thoughts, or actions diminish warmth? Self-hate, self-criticism, and self-judgment greatly diminish warmth. Spending time with people who roll their eyes at us, lift only one side of their mouth when they talk to us, define or label us, or tell us how we feel, all these diminish warmth. Asking ourselves to be perfect diminishes warmth. How can emotional warmth be nurtured? By finding out what feels really good and is really good for us. Touch that feels good and relaxing can nurture warmth. Resonance plants seeds of warmth and lets it grow strong and resilient. Gatherings where nourishing and delicious food is shared and people laugh together can nurture warmth. Being unconditionally accepted can bring us warmth. The surprise of being loved nurtures warmth. Often the inner voice can seem devoid of emotion altogether, but whatever its tone, it tends to flow in an endless stream of chatter about the good, the bad, and the ugly, who we are, what we've done, what we've forgotten, and what the other people in our lives have done, haven't done, or are going to do. Don't believe it? Stop listening for several moments and see what happens. Wait long enough so that the thoughts that these words have stirred up have settled. The pattern that runs automatically in our heads when our brain is not engaged in doing something intentional is our inner voice. Even if we can't hear this voice, we might guess what its tone is from the way we treat ourselves or from the way we are thinking about others. If we have had experiences of being known and delighted in by people who have been important to us, such as parents, grandparents, teachers, or even a kind neighbor, our thoughts may have an easy, gentle tone. If people have had other life experiences, such as having parents or spouses who want to improve them and only speak to them to make them better, who are exhausted and want their children or partners to be seen and not heard, or who are surrounded by too much busyness or are too overwhelmed to see them at all, then a person's inner voice may sound very different. For many people, this inner voice can be unrelentingly negative and sometimes even vicious. Even with all of that, there is good news. You can hear, understand, and transform your inner voice if you don't enjoy the way it treats you. As people take in the self-compassion and self-understanding encouraged in these pages, they will often let go of distracting themselves by being continually busy, keeping the television, computer, or smartphone turned on 24/7, eating comfort foods, or having a couple of drinks. Instead, there will be tendrils of a different possibility. There is a gradual hope of being able to respond in a new way. As the inner voice becomes calmer and more supportive, people start to like themselves. This happens inexorably once something called resonance comes into the picture. Resonance is the experience of sensing that another being fully understands us and sees us with emotional warmth and generosity. It is the sense that we know that they could try on our skin, and that our feelings and longings would make sense to them. What's the difference between empathy and resonance? There are many definitions of empathy, including walking in other people's shoes, understanding their experience, interpreting the emotional states of others, and experiencing related emotions. None of these captures the necessity of being a we, that is, part of a resonance. In resonance, the person who is receiving says, "Yes, you are with me. You understand me." This can happen verbally, or it can happen with a sigh and with physical relaxation. I can have empathy for homeless people when I drive by them, and they will never know. We cannot be resonant with a person unless we are being relational. Resonance is a two-person experience. Someone else can't simply declare a resonance with us. The receivers are the ones who get to say whether or not someone else's presence or language feels resonant. You might be thinking, if feeling better is dependent on something that is supposed to happen between two people, then my goose is cooked. I don't have anyone else. I am alone in this world. That is the reason I wrote this book, to offer a way for people to learn to be with themselves. This is why the title is Your Resonant Self. In order to be resonant with yourself, you have to notice two different parts of yourself, your emotional self and your resonant self. Your emotional self is the one who gets to say whether the part of you who is trying to be resonant is hitting the mark. It is still a two-person experience, but both of the people are inside you. If you sometimes feel sad and need hope that healing is at hand, this book is for you. If you ever look at old patterns and long for positive change, this book is for you. If you sometimes feel like you are on shaky ground and would like a solid foundation under your feet, this book is for you. If you ever feel anxious and want calmness, this book is for you. If you sometimes feel bewildered and want to be able to like the human race, this book is for you. If you ever feel depressed and would like a reason to keep moving, this book is for you. If you sometimes need a little hope that you are essentially just right, this book is for you. And if you love to learn about the brain, this book is for you. You are listening to the best words I could put together to invite your brain to come on a journey of learning with me to transform your inner voice. This journey follows a healing path of connection with the body, learning about the brain, and resonant language. Resonant language is language that gives people a sense of being understood. It has a feeling tone and references relationship, shared memories, and acknowledgement. This type of language includes wondering about and naming emotion, dreams, longings, and needs, body sensations, and fresh metaphor, visual imagery, and poetry. Resonance skill 0.1. What is a resonance skill? People can use language to create connection. And they can use language to separate themselves and to push people away. There is a joining with others, or the self, when words are resonant, while words that are critical, judgmental, or objectifying split the brain and stop warmth in its tracks. The way a person speaks matters, as it reveals whether their thoughts are coherent, whether they speak with integrity, how they use their brains, and what are their deeply held attitudes towards self and other. The way people speak to themselves can lead to long-term self-support and well-being, or to stress and lack of resilience. When people change the way they speak to themselves, they change the way their brain works. Language is a starting point for the movement toward warmth for the self, and throughout this book, we will be building an understanding of how to use language in ways that are supportive of brain integration. These are called resonance skills. When people let go of comparing and criticizing themselves and move toward warm self-understanding to care for themselves, they are moving toward brain health. Each chapter provides a chance to experience how resonant language can change the brain through guided meditations and empathy. Then you'll learn something about how the full-body brain works in order to support self-knowledge and self-compassion. When we find out that we make sense and that our ancient habits of self-disparagement are just our brain's best attempt to take care of us, a new gentleness enters the picture. As we learn about our brains, we are creating new connections that allow a more generous and relaxed way to see the self. The big picture of who we are becomes bigger and more complex as we begin to take into account the way we are wired, the effect of other people's brains and behaviors on us, and the effect of past generations of brains on our own patterns of thinking and feeling. A lively and warm curiosity about humans and their behavior is born, making life richer and more interesting at every turn. So, while you are listening, I will ask your brain to link things together in a new way. An example of this is happening right now, as I invite you to bring your sense of self to mind and simultaneously to feel affection, curiosity, and welcome for yourself. You may never have been asked to look at yourself with emotional warmth before. Our brains are always growing and changing in response to the experiences we have. When we bring our attention to, 1, how we feel about ourselves, and 2, our capacity for gentle understanding, then all of a sudden we are cultivating a new way to be with ourselves, and that is the essence of this book. As I introduce these new ideas by writing about them, and you immerse yourself in them by hearing about them, we are asking your brain to change so that it is a better place for you to live. During this journey through the brain and through the basics of resonant communication, I will invite you to notice your body sensations and your emotional responses as much as possible. The more you allow yourself to feel, both physically and emotionally, and begin to see the connections between your deepest longings and your emotions, the more change is possible. This book invites you to make this learning your own and to look at your life story with new eyes. Despite what you may believe, you are not defined by the story you have lived up to now. You are not set in stone or frozen in ice. As you find and melt the history of self-blame and frozen emotional trauma, the moments when what is happening around you is too difficult, terrifying, or painful for your brain body to bear, and it is impossible for you to integrate the experience, you will learn what your true and generous life story really is. Once all the pieces influencing you are on the table, you will start to braid together an understanding that your decisions have always made sense. No matter how often you have called yourself an idiot or regretted what you have done, once you understand the brain effects of freezing and self-protection, you will know that you have always been making the best moves available to you. In this movement toward healing, we are physically changing our brains. Brain Concept 0.1 Neuroplasticity. The scientific word for the brain's capacity to change is neuroplasticity. For a long time, that word didn't make sense to me, because I was thinking about plastic as being something firm and hard. But in this case, the word plastic means moldable. The word neuroplastic means that the neurons, the basic cells of our brains, grow and shift in response to life experience, and the way that they link with one another changes, too. Most people, when they hear the word brain, immediately think of the bumpy walnut-shaped organ inside the skull. However, the cells that make up this organ are indivisibly linked to the body's distributed nervous system. All the body's nerves, including the neurons of the skull brain. The more that people study the brain, the fewer distinctions they make between the skull brain and the entire body brain. In this book, when I'm writing only about the brain in the skull, I will write skull brain. When I write the word brain, I am referring to the entire nervous system running throughout the body, including the brain in the skull. Every so often I'll use the words brain in the entire body, or distributed nervous system, or brain body, to remind you that I'm really talking about a full body and skull experience. The inside of the skull brain is closely packed with billions of neurons, the most studied type of brain cell, and other supportive brain cells. It is an inner world entirely different from the outer world, so it is tricky to try to describe it using images from our familiar landscape. It runs more like quantum space instead of abiding by the regular rules of physics. At the same time, images from the familiar world can help people orient themselves to new learning. So I will try to use comparisons where possible, all the while naming the ways in which my similes fall short of the complexity and essential difference of the brain. For example, neurons look a little like trees, and some scientists even call them trees, each with multiple branches, called dendrites, and a single root, called an axon. They are different from trees, though, in many ways. While trees communicate with one another with gases through their leaves and with chemicals through their roots, neurons align themselves branches to roots in every direction in the densely packed matter of the brain and use different brain chemicals to communicate different messages to one another, almost always running energy and information from the axon of one neuron to a dendrite of another. Neurons are also much more responsive and changeable than trees are. On a tree, once a branch has grown, it stays there until it is knocked off or falls off. In contrast, the branches of neurons, its dendrites, are in a constant state of change, depending entirely on how we are using our brain. All humans, even adults, grow thousands of new neurons in their skull brains every day. This is called neurogenesis. These new neurons help us hold new information and learning. But the major way that the brain learns is by forming and strengthening associations between already existing neurons. In the mysterious world of the brain, neurons and brain areas that are not even touching one another can be linked and read by the brain as a whole. Memories are collections of multiple inputs from many sources. What we call learning is an interneuronal connection and association process that takes place across millions of cells. The structural organization and reorganization of the neurons that are at the root of learning are the essence of neuroplasticity. Here are some of the ways that the brain changes in response to learning. Neurons grow new bumps on their dendrites, called spines, that can receive information from the axons of other neurons to form new connections. Sometimes this learning is remembered for a long time, and the spines stay in place, even turning into dendrites themselves. Sometimes things are forgotten, and the spines and connections disappear. This process is called neuronal remodeling. Connection sites between neurons, called synapses, form and disappear. Synapses can change the way they create and receive brain chemicals. For example, the brains of methamphetamine users decrease the number of receptors, the areas on the ends of dendrites that receive chemical messages, that can detect a brain chemical called dopamine, to try to create balance in response to the sudden high from methamphetamines, caused by the synapse receiving a much greater rush of dopamine than the brain usually produces. In other cases, the number of receptors might be increased, looking for particular brain chemicals that may be lacking. As we introduce emotional warmth and integration.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?